Back together again, you and I, midweek Wednesday style, June 4th, 2025, right here for you on Connecticut Today. I was joined, as usual, on Wednesday by Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar, chatting about the major issues resolved and otherwise at the state capitol as the current legislative session had just hours to go. And CBS News reporter Aaron Navarro detailed President Trump's surprise call with Russian leader Vladimir Putin on the war in Ukraine. Every Wednesday at this time, midweek Wednesday, the 5:15 break, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media senior columnist and editor. Mr. Haar, good afternoon. Is it over yet? Is it done in Hartford? Dan, when does it end?
Midnight. I'm actually not there. I'm working on other stuff. I'm looking ahead. I've done a lot of legislative stories, and okay. I'll go there tonight. I will stop in and because I have a few things I'm looking in on.
All right.
But, as far as the bulk of the work, listen, we've got three or four people there, and I have opined where I'm going to opine. But it's a busy day, and
yeah.
I think looking back on the session, if you were going to ask me for an overview of the session, perhaps, mm-hmm. or maybe a different tack,
mm-hmm.
I would say four words.
Quote, yeah.
A modest first step. I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bills where people can say, we had hoped for a bigger reform,
yeah.
but it's a modest first step.
Yeah, yeah. I know one of those, Dan, before we get to the stuff you are working on is housing. And I got texted a little while ago from a contact of mine up in Hartford who said, the governor still has not signed the housing bill yet, and he is really hearing it from municipalities begging him not to do it. In your world, now who knows, he may have done it, and I just don't know. Do you see any scenario where he goes, no?
I do not, because he's pretty much committed, not by what he's said since the bill passed,
yeah.
but by having been at the table.
Mm-hmm.
People helped negotiate that bill,
yeah.
and that's the key bill, and that's really the first on my list when
okay.
you say what bills were big reforms,
yep.
but have been watered down. That's a watered down bill. He signs it.
All right. What else do you have for us?
Well, I think you have to look at the energy bill. We had hoped to see, I shouldn't say we, some people had hoped to see a much more ambitious
mm-hmm.
shifting of cost that reduces your electric bill. And it really comes down to $10 or $12 a month
yeah.
that they're going to whack off your bill by mostly refinancing. A very small piece of it is about $100 million, which is small in terms of your monthly bill, is actual cuts to what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it is taking things that were going to be on your bill directly and financing them either through the state bonding or through a long-term what's called a revenue bond, where the ratepayers still pay for it, but you're stretching out the payments over
yeah.
a longer period. That would be the smart meters. So in short, the climate bill was watered down like the others, but it's still a meaningful step. And it does. The Republicans, by the way, were able to get some pretty good governance changes
uh-huh.
that might start to break the logjam between the utilities, the governor, the legislators, and the regulators.
You know, I noticed, and to that end, Dan, you read my mind. I was going to lead the next segment here with this. I noticed Norm Needleman from Essex, of course, the chair of Energy and Technology, majority Democrats there. He said something, and I'm paraphrasing now because I don't have it up on my computer, but you know the phrase I'm talking about. He goes, well, listen, this is a first step, but we have to be careful because, he talked about the complexity of the system and blowing up the system, and it's not that easy to do. I understand that, but I mean, it may be messy, but we did get to the moon in 7 years, when we had NASA's rockets blowing up on the launch pad. Like, I don't like to hear, and this is just me, well, it's hard. Well, like Jack Kennedy said, we don't do things because they're easy, because they are hard. You know what I mean?
They're not, but I love your Boston accent, your Boston Brahmin accent.
You like that.
But I think there's a difference between hard technologically,
yeah.
i.e. putting a man, and they still haven't never put a woman on the moon. I regret that.
Yeah.
But and hard politically, because what's hard politically mm-hmm. is there are a lot of competing interests. There were 80 people negotiating that bill.
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
And the other thing is that that the reality is that you can't make costs go away. It costs a certain amount of money to deliver electricity safely and not 100%, but 99.9% reliably to 2 million houses and businesses in Connecticut. That has a certain cost, and you can't make costs go away. Remember, NASA had no price tag.
That's right. Yeah, what do we need, right? Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, joining us on this Wednesday. Dan, I know you're good with this stuff. Medicaid, overruns, underruns in the budget, and I know the governor was trying to get a little bit more of the hospital tax shaved off late yesterday. Where do we stand on those things? Whatever happened to that? Have you seen the final numbers?
I haven't seen the final numbers, but quickly, in terms of an overview, starting with Medicaid, the big controversy was as I predicted, they figured out a way to magically find $150 or $200 million to get under the cap as for the second year.
Yeah.
And the way they did was, back in 2017, a very obscure part of the guardrails law said that you can prepay the teacher's pension fund without having to go under the cap.
Mm-hmm.
So we took $200 million of today's surplus out of the surplus bucket, paid the 2027 teachers' pension fund, and that frees up an equal amount of money, and that enabled the whole budget to work. Republicans are screaming bloody murder because they're saying we're in effect going around the cap. The other thing with Medicaid is we obviously don't know what's going to happen with the federal government, and that's the same thing with a lot of things with the federal government, certainly. But with Medicaid, you did not have to they did not significantly change the rates.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we need reform to get the rates higher, which is going to cost us more, but which is going to get people treated, which they can't get right now. And as for the hospital tax, we just don't know what the feds are going to do. We're seeking an exemption. And yes, they knocked it down by, I think, $100 million from about $300 to about $200. Why? I don't know. We should be maxing out on that.
Yeah, Dan, before I get to a hypothetical here, one more thing. You were you had alluded to the renaming of what is now, I forget the name of the arena. It used to be the Excel Center, but it has the new name now. But let me ask you.
People's Bank.
I forgot which bank. Any more from your sniffing around as to the Mohegans, the Connecticut Sun, maybe a partner there? Do they play more games in Hartford? Anything, if anything, new on that at all?
Yeah, we know that the Sun is still considering its options. But as we discussed, I think last week, they told legislators. I think we did.
They told legislators that
an outright sale is unlikely.
What we know
and what I haven't been able to identify is there is a group in Connecticut
that's committed
to sending money to the Mohegan Tribe and the Tribal Gaming Authority, which they used to call it, such that they would not have to go outside the state for an infusion of cash to build that $50 to $75 million practice facility. I haven't been able to identify it, but I know they're out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, what's a group? Is it business people? Is it the General Assembly? I mean, when you say a group, are they well-heeled investors? What do you mean?
It's business people, and the name that's been dropped out there, including by Lamont himself, is Jeffrey Flax, the CEO of Hartford Healthcare. They ain't talking.
Okay.
Hartford Healthcare ain't talking.
All right, finally, Dan, I get infuriated every time this year because of the deadline, and I know it's de rigueur, it's how the game is played in Hartford, but I thoroughly infuriated many of my conservative listeners, Dan Har, when I said, hey, maybe a full-time legislature is not a bad idea when you have major pieces of business that have to get done, that have to get put off because you have this timeline dating back to agrarian times when people were farming. I don't know about you, there aren't too many wheat farms in Connecticut. What are your thoughts on that? Do we get enough done with this 3-month, 5-month thing, or should we look in the future and maybe changing that?
Well, there's a pretty good number of cannabis farms, but what I think we should do is, my compromise suggestion, which I floated a couple of years ago, was officially keep the bills alive. We're going to lose about 120 bills today.
Yeah.
right? That bills that are passing one chamber but not the other, bills that are dying outright. That's hundreds of bills, right? So what you do is you keep the legislature not full time, but they meet 3 days a month, so that bills don't automatically die, right? The problem with that is there is a freshness to having to start anew because you rethink bills. If bills never died and you met either full time as you're suggesting, or and nobody, by the way, likes that. When I floated it in 20 years ago, Gary LeBeau, the former legislator from East Hartford, was the only guy who wanted to do it. Nobody wants to do it. But the long and the short of it is that there is a good aspect to having to start fresh with new eyes on a bill. Take AI, for example. You want to just keep arguing about the same bill for 5 years?
No. No, I get your point. Yeah, I got
That's one of the dead ones this year, by the way.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, thankfully, but that's another day, another time. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, thank you as always. Have a wonderful weekend. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Keep paying that motor vehicle tax.
Yes, 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 yes. Let's check in with this gentleman, one of our regulars that we check in with from CBS News, the nation's capital. It is never a dull moment covering the Trump White House. Aaron Navarro joins us. Aaron, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Paul, good to hear from you. Good to be with you.
Coffee and patch cables, all well? We all good on both fronts?
Patch cables, all good.
All right, excellent. The president today spoke with Vladimir Putin. Was this, I don't remember this being publicized, or am I wrong? Was this on the schedule today? Because I saw a warning from you folks that it was happening rather quick. Did you know this was happening?
Yeah, this is not on the schedule today, and this has been how President Trump is announcing some of the readouts with his kind of major calls. It's been through his, social media app, Truth Social.
So the bottom line, it sounds like he spoke to him, Aaron, but he's kind of trying to, temper expectations here. At least that's the impression I got. What do you think?
Yeah, that was the key line to me. He said, quote, it was a good conversation, but not a conversation that will lead to immediate peace. It was about an hour and 15 minutes long. One part that stuck out to me was that Trump said that Putin said, quote, very strongly he'd have to respond to Ukraine's drone attacks from this past weekend, where they essentially smuggled in drones on semi-trucks that damaged Russian aircrafts and bombers. And there was also maybe some agreement between Trump and Putin when it comes to stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. That's a big goal of the president, who says that Putin might get involved in those talks soon.
Interesting. Finally, Aaron Navarro, any buzz there? What are you folks hearing as to any help that we may have given maybe to Ukraine? Any buzz that, we may have provided intel or satellite imagery? Because these drones got really far into Russia, didn't they?
That's right. And, I don't want to discount that, but they have not been asked something like that. They have not said anything on that in terms of assisting Ukraine in that way. And this post from the president about his call with Putin was actually his first comments acknowledging that talk happened, which is certainly interesting. It also comes days after we had our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who spoke with Russia's foreign minister. So this seems more so that the White House is trying to get talks going with Russia and trying to help whichever way they can. But as the president, acknowledged himself, immediate peace may not be coming.
All right. Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, as always, thank you for the time. Be good. Take care. And we'll chat. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Aaron Navarro there, one of our guys and gals in D.C. So how about that, huh?